The Side of the Saints.
"That's it!"
screamed Judge, springing up and smashing at the wounded table so savagely she put a great split in it.
"Fucking stop!"
Savine had not paid enough for all the support that was coming from the galleries. Some of it must have actually been heartfelt, people taking no small risk to show their honest feelings. She had worked all her life to be envied. She had never imagined she might truly be liked.
"Broad!"
Judge showered spit, tendons starting from her hand as she shook her hammer towards the galleries.
"Next bastard makes a sound, get up there and show 'em the quick way down."
Broad glared up, then towards Judge, then towards Savine. He had a paper crumpled in his fist. The letter she had given him? The hall had fallen quiet as the grave. Being liked was very pleasant, but its limitations as a shield against terror were starkly revealed.
"Any other cunt wants to lend support to our defendant can come down and join her in the dock."
Judge's black eyes swept the balconies, the benches.
"No? No one?"
A silence so complete it was a pressure on the ear.
"Didn't fucking think so."
Swarbrick wrung his hands.
"Citizeness, Judge. Sit the shit down, you posturing dunce,"
she snarled back at him,
"for I send you to the tower ahead."
Swarbrick sat. Judge turned her glare on Savine.
"Let's stop tickling the rim and come to the point. You've dressed like a nursemaid, and you've smiled at some orphans, and you've handed out a blanket or two. Congratulations. But you are Savine Dan Glockter. You are the daughter of not one tyrant, but two, not to mention the sister of a third."
"Should I be punished for my birth?" she asked, but her voice was giving out. It sounded thin.
"I've seen folk convicted for less."
Judge nodded towards Orso's cage.
"But if you want weightier crimes, I understand you and the king knew each other a little better than a brother and sister should."
In spite of everything, she could not help looking at him, could not help meeting his eye, could not help feeling the same as she always had. Judge followed the look between them, red brows high.
"I mean to say, you'll find no broader minds than mine, but even I get itchy around incest."
Savine felt her face burning and knew she must look guilty as the plague, knew she was guilty as the plague.
"I never knew he was..."
She could not even finish the sentence.
"Spare your blushes."
Judge waved a generous hand.
"Put the brother fucking to one side. Put all the rest in the best baby nurturing, orphan housing, loaf giving light you've got. Truth is, you are a profiteer. You did exploit the working man and woman and child. You have built your palaces from their bones. You're the worst of the old regime, squeezed into the shape of a woman. You're fucking guilty, girl. Guilty as Glustrod, and I know it, and you know it, and we all damn well know it."
Savine did know it. The list of people she had used unrolled pitilessly before her. The desperate supplicants at the Solar Society, the partners she had bullied and blackmailed, the workers she had beaten and tortured, the children slaving in her mill in Valbeck, the soldiers buried in shallow graves at Stoffenbeck, even her own husband, who she had deftly prodded into serving her ambitions, then left him to pay the bill with his arm and his leg. One cannot climb high without standing on others, and all she had wanted was to reach the top. What a waste it all seemed now. There is nothing at the summit in the end but a long drop. A different kind of murmur was coming from the galleries, and not nearly so friendly.
"But this court is not without mercy," called Judge, holding up a hand for silence. "We see you've tried to make amends. We see you've done some good. The same hands that clawed profits from the people have given them back to the needy. You've put a toe on righteous earth, even if you left the other foot on evil. So we'll give you a chance to come down on the side of the saints, as your Gurkish friends might say."
Judge leaned forwards and pointed with her long forefinger.
"Accept your guilt and denounce. Denounce both your fathers. Tell us where we can find old Styx. Put him in the dock in your place and live. Refuse."
She draped herself back into her chair, black eyes fixed on Savine like a wolf's on dinner.
"The Tower of Chains is waiting."
No one called out in Savine's defence now, paid or not, and who could blame them? There was only accusation in the rings of tight-packed faces at the balconies above. She leaned over the dock to lay Ardy in the crook of Freed's arm next to her brother. The blanket had come loose, and she tucked it gently around her again, laid one hand upon her, the other on Harrod. He squirmed and snivelled. She wanted to hold him so badly, one last time. But that would only put them in danger. She had to do the brave thing for once, put someone else above herself, and let them go.
"Try to keep them safe," she whispered.
Freed nodded dumbly, tears on her cheeks. Tears more of fear than sorrow, Savine rather thought, and who could blame her? She adjusted her dress as she turned back to Judge. Foolishness, of course, but the habit was impossible to break. Her mother had always warned her, a man is judged by his best moment, a woman by her worst. One had to make the effort, even for an informal event. Savine forced back her shoulders, raised her chin into that position of eternal slight discomfort her governess always used to call deportment.
"I have no idea where my father is," she said.
Judge narrowed her eyes.
"Come, come, Citizeness Brock, that won't save your life."
Short of Archlector Glockter throwing off a cloak and revealing himself in the public gallery, Savine did not see that anything could. But she refused to let them beat her. Dignity is not worth much in the end, but she was determined to keep it even so.
"You picked apt names for yourselves."
Savine looked around the ruined hall that was once the Lord's Round. Its scarred marble, smashed furniture, empty slogans, red-daubed thugs.
"You are burners. You build nothing. You make nothing. All you can do is destroy. The old regime was rotten. The people cried for freedom. What have you given them?"
She gave a helpless shrug.
"Corpses. I do not know where my father is, but even if I did, I would not tell you."
The echoes faded, no sound but the quick breath through her nostrils and little Harrod's faint snivelling. Her efforts had not even dented Judge's smile.
"Then, Citizeness Brock, you give me no choice but to sentence you to death by falling from the Tower of Chains. And may I say that in my long career, there's no ruling I've enjoyed pronouncing more."
And she raised her hammer.
"Wait!"
screeched Orso, his sweaty face pressed to the bars of his cage. Judge turned ever so slowly to regard him through narrowed eyes.
"For what, Citizen Orso?" "If she won't make denouncements, I will.
A swell of whispers went up, in spite of Judge's threats.
I'll denounce anyone. I'll denounce everyone. I'll give you the best damn denouncing you ever heard.
Judge stared at him for a long, tense moment, while a bead of sweat tickled ever so slowly down his scalp. Then she gave vent to a delighted chuckle.
Oh, ho, ho, this we have to hear. Corporal Halder, let his excuse for a fucking majesty address the court.
Halder strode to the cage's door and unlocked it as the eager babble spread around the hall.
What are you doing?
Hissed Hildy, as also stepped from captivity.
Buying time.
He was no mighty warrior. He was no learned sage. But when it came to talking rubbish, he acknowledged no equal.
Representatives!
He thundered, advancing across the tiled floor where he had once sentenced Lord Wetterland to death.
Ex-lords and ladies, ex-subjects of myself and my father, good citizens and citizenesses of the Union, I, Orso the First, King of Angland, Starrickland and Middleland, Protector of Westport and High King of the Union, lately resident in a freezing cellar beneath the palace, come before you now, in this sweltering ruin, to make denouncements.
Do it then, said Judge.
I will, citizeness, I will.
Orso cleared his throat, gave the court an apologetic smile, dragged out the expectant silence.
I fear I cannot divulge to you the hiding place of old Styx, not by any means because I refuse to do so, because I do not know. Honestly, what kind of fool would trust me with important information? Would you trust me? I'm not sure I would.
He shook his head as a few chuckles echoed from the galleries.
I'm not sure I would.
He was happy to be their clown if it bought Savine a few moments.
But I'll happily denounce the bastard. He was arch-lector of the Inquisition, for the fate's sakes. He more or less denounces himself.
Hearty shouts of agreement.
He was the rotten heart of the closed council for 30 years. A hoarder of power, a prolific torturer, an implacable enemy to noble men and common men alike. Worst of all, he has let his daughter...
He looked over at Savine, who was staring at him from the dock, hands gripping its rail.
His adopted daughter... pay for his crimes in his absence. What a withered shit! What a crippled coward! What a two-bit tyrant!
Cheers and laughter at each insult, and also glanced at Tunney just in passing. The ex-standard-bearer had the ghost of a smile, still turning that one finger around and around. Drag it out, drag it out. Also took a huge breath.
Yes, good citizens and citizenesses, His Eminence Archlector Glockter was a specimen as morally as he was physically repugnant. But he did not ruin the Union alone. He did not bring us to the dire pass in which we now find ourselves without a willing patsy to warm the throne while he worked. Pray allow me to make an introduction to my noble father, King Jazal the First.
A few bits of thrown food accompanied the name, and some light heckling, which Judge was obliged to wave into silence.
Interrupt the defence, people, by all means, but not the fucking denunciations.
My thanks, Your Honour.
Orso bowed extravagantly, exactly the way his mother had taught him.
I like to think my father had good instincts, buried deep. He would often discuss them when we fenced together. Projects for the relief of the poor, for the fair distribution of medicine and education, for peace on our borders. But that he had good instincts
only makes his total failure to follow them all the worse. You can pardon a man who knows no better. One who ignores the best parts of himself, you can only condemn. What a waste of flesh he turned out to be! What a worthless fart! What an empty vessel!
Hear, hear! Judge hammered lazily at the table. I find the bastard guilty in his absence.
Far from the worst injustice witnessed in the court of the people, in spite of his many faults, Orso's father had been a generous sort. He would not have minded being lightly slandered in a good cause, especially when that good cause was the life of his firstborn natural child.
Thank you, friends, for your patience, bellowed Orso. But my role of ignominy is by no means finished. You might suppose the blame would stop at the throne, but you could not be more wrong. There has always been a man behind the throne of the Union. He let the moment stretch, the anticipation build. I would like next to denounce none other than Baez, the first of the Magi, whose statue until recently stood in the Kingsway. Two statues of the bastard, in fact, such was his monstrous vanity. The top and tail to centuries of exploitation. He was the man who gave my father and old Styx their orders. He was the painstaking watchmaker who pieced together the corrupt system that ground every citizen of the Union down. He was the one who returned when it suited him to ensure it was still grinding people down as efficiently as ever. He was the one who carelessly laid waste to the Agrient, who killed thousands in the name of his ambitions, then forced the survivors to celebrate him as their savior. The very personification of ruthlessness, a puppeteer who used kings as his marionettes.
All eyes were fixed on him as he paraded across the grubby tiles. He caught a glimpse of Savine whispering to her maid, and the woman edged away with the children in her arms. Orso redoubled his efforts.
All this is common, if horrible, knowledge. But do you know how he profited from it all? Profited beyond the dreams of avarice. You want usurers, hoarders, speculators? Baez is the grandfather of them all, a magus more taken with money than magic.
Secrets did not seem so very important now, nor immortal wizards so very frightening.
He is both Valiant and Bulk. The loans that broke the state were all taken from him, the interest all paid to him. He was the one who made a great change inevitable. Made it necessary, even. He is the one who should be standing in that dock to receive the people's justice.
I'll keep a warrant warm for him, said Judge, her black eyes gleaming. But sad to say, the first of the Magi is beyond our reach. You done?
I beg the court's patience for just one more. The worst of the pack, the lowest of the low. Lastly and most fiercely, I denounce myself.
And he spread his arms wide as though inviting the crowd to shoot him full of arrows. There was laughter, there was applause of a mocking variety.
I have been lazy, I have been vain, I have been as petty as my mother and as indecisive as my father. I could have done good, but I could not be bothered. I could have made peace, but I was too busy making love. I could have made the Union a better place, if only I hadn't been so very, very drunk. I have no doubt that history will judge me to have been not only the last High King of the Union, but the worst, and my brief reign the most disastrous on...
There was a boom as the doors at the top of the aisle were flung open and a burner in red-smeared armour staggered breathless to the steps. Judge leapt up, raising her hammer as if she was about to fling it at him.
I said we weren't to be disturbed.
But there's royalists approaching the Agrient, he squealed, cringing.
There's what?
Inside the city, Lord Marshal Forrest is leading them.
There was no stopping the noise now. Gasps of royalists, screams of treachery, shrieks of Forrest.
Where's the fucking young lion? Demanded Judge.
He's with them.
For a moment, even she was lost for words. Everyone was. And as Orso looked across the staring faces on the representatives' benches, from citizens Huygen and Isha to a surprisingly popular beggar elected from the three farms, he knew they were all working desperately at this strange new sum, trying to tally up where their best interests lay, and therefore what mixture of emotion to put on display. He suspected loyalties shifted quicker in that moment than at any time since his father was unexpectedly voted to the throne. Those most loyal to the Great Change shook fists and roared their dismay. Several of the ex-lords did not look surprised, let alone displeased. Most chose, perhaps wisely, to hedge their bets and stay quiet. But up in the public gallery they were more vocal.
The young lion!
Someone called, in what sounded very much like full-throated support.
The darling of the slums! Came a woman's voice. You saved my...
Cut off in a squeal.
Freedom! Freedom!
Though for who and from what was not explained. A kind of fever had broken out, a madness of hope, fear and fury, like the one on the day the breakers first took the city, maybe. People scrambled for the doors, ran for safety, for their families. Others fought their way to the railings of the gallery to bellow their disgust or their encouragement.
Death to aristocrats!
Enough bloodshed! Enough bloodshed!
Down with the Great Change! Hang 'em all! Bastards!
There was even a plaintive cry of,
Long live the King!
Over Ernest, entirely mad, or simply an early bet on a new reality, it was impossible to say.
I fucking doubt it, snarled Judge.
She pointed at Orso with a finger sporting at least four stolen wedding rings.
Since you're so keen to denounce yourself on her behalf, you can take the long drop with her. Corporal Halder, bind this fool!
Halder looked like he'd much rather have slipped out of a side door, but the habit of obedience was hard to break. He and one of his fellows pulled Orso's arms behind him and the cord painfully tight about his wrists, while Broad brought Savine down from the dock and bound her hands, his heavy jaw fixed, his red eyes staring.
Banners to me!
Screeched Judge, and they began to converge from every part of the court, from the benches, from the galleries, from their places on guard around the walls. Men and women with red-daubed clothes, red-spattered armour, the fire of fanaticism still hot in their eyes. Men and women who would rather go down in flames than see any hint of the old Union return. Halder grabbed Orso under the arm and started to march him towards the aisle, a good 40 burners gathering around them in a grim knot, weapons drawn, with Judge their furious spear point. The door shuddered against Vic's shoulder with a sound of splintering wood. They'd brought an axe then, and from the feel of it, a big one. She wondered how long she and Gorst could hold the door shut. She wondered how many burners were out there. She wondered what would happen when they got in. She didn't like any of her answers. The axe blows stopped, and there was a sudden shove on the door, harder than ever, so hard it nearly flung Vic to the ground. She'd wedged pieces of broken spear into the brackets where the bar would have gone, but they didn't fit, jumping and flexing. She could hear them outside, one voice calling the rhythm.
Shove! Shove! Shove!
There was a faint squealing, and with a chill horror, Vic saw one of the brackets was working loose, rusted nails easing from splintering wood at the pressure outside.
The frame's rotten!
She hissed through her gritted teeth. The door had eased open a chink, and then wider, the grunts and growls coming louder than ever from beyond. Gorst's eyes met hers, and she got the feeling they'd come to the same conclusion. They weren't going to be able to hold that door shut much longer.
On three,
he hissed, keeping one shoulder braced against the wood, but sliding out his short steel with the other hand.
We open it.
We fucking what?
Vic snarled back at him.
And fight!
The door jerked open another finger's breadth. Something slid through, so close to Vic she had to twist her face away, staring at it cross-eyed. The blade of a spear. Someone was using it as a lever, working the door open.
One,
squeaked Gorst. Vic gave the door a last parting shove, then scrambled back, clawing her bloody mace up from the floor.
Two.
The bracket dropped free of the frame and bounced away, the pieces of broken spear tumbling, Gorst's boot sliding as he was forced back.
Three.
And he jumped clear, sweeping out his long steel. Between the half-light and the panic, Vic wasn't sure how many burst through into the chain room. Too many. They were shouting. She'd no idea what, over her own quick breath. Just swearing, maybe. Just mindless shrieking, maybe. She might have been shrieking herself. One came tottering, bent over, almost falling from the pressure behind. Gorst's long steel hacked into the back of his head in a spray of blood. Another got the short steel through his guts and floundered about screeching, tangled up with his own halberd. Another came with a shield up, barreled into Gorst, and managed to shove him away from the door. Which is how one could come straight at Vic, screaming at the top of his voice. She caught a glimpse of him as he pounded through a shaft of light, lips curled back, a smear of burner's red paint across his cheek. Then her mace crunched into his mouth, bits of tooth flying. His head snapped up, his roar turned to a squawk. She tried to swing again, but he blundered into her, so the mace missed his head and thumped weakly against his back. She stumbled, caught her heel on a fallen body, and went over on her ass. With a kind of wounded bellow, the burner she'd hit in the mouth flopped towards the nearest windlass, drooling blood.
Fuck!
Vic scrambled up, rearing over him, swinging the mace with both hands. She smashed in the back of his head, but his hands were already around the lever. Now he sagged onto it, a dead weight. There was a heavy clunk. Gears whirred as the portcullis began to drop in its frame, its cross-hatched shadow shifting on the wall. There was a clatter as Gorst dropped his steels and caught the windlass. It dragged him along for a moment, but he twisted, teeth clenched, got his shoulder against one handle and braced himself, trembling, growling, having to strain with all his strength to hold it up. For an instant, everything was oddly still. Then someone stepped through the door behind him. Corporal Smiler, and by no means smiling. He saw Gorst, he saw all the dead burners, plus one still screaming, crawling, screaming as he tried to hold his guts in. He heaved up an outsized axe, the one he must have been using on the door, its blade near scraping the ceiling, ready to split Gorst's skull in half. He gave a surprised oof as Vic charged into him, drove him crashing into the wall, the axe bouncing off her back and onto the floor. She went at him with everything she had, tried for his balls with a clumsy jab of the mace, but only hit his hip, dug her other fist into his stomach, but barely got a wheeze from him. She straightened up so she could swing at his throat. She caught a flash of movement in the darkness, then a sick crunch. She gave a snorting gurgle. Mouth full of blood, her face felt weird. Someone was screaming, choking, horrible screams. Was that her? There'd been something important she had to do. Couldn't think what. Couldn't think at all. Something about a tunnel? Ah, portcullis! She groggily shook her head. She could see Gorst still straining at the windlass, jaw squirming, but he looked a long way off. Everything dim. There was something tight around her neck. Tried to slap it away, but her hands were so weak. It squeezed tighter and tighter. Couldn't breathe. Smiler had her around the throat, pressed up against the wall, her feet barely touching the floor. He was snarling in her throbbing face. She tore at his hands with her nails, her mouth blowing breathless, bloody squelches in his face. She wriggled, struggled, but he was too strong, couldn't breathe. She managed to work her heel up the wall behind her. He twisted her head up, back, as if he was killing a chicken, wringing her neck. She wriggled, squirmed, till her fishing hand found the grip of the knife in her boot. Felt like he was going to twist her head off. Felt like her skull was going to burst. Couldn't breathe. He kept holding her with one hand, made a big fist with the other, bringing it back to smash her face again, and she pulled the knife and lashed at him overhand. Her arm was numb, tangled with his elbow on the way, but the blade still caught something. He let go, and she flopped down on hands and knees. She could just hear his wail over the sudden roaring of blood in her ears. She saw him lurch away, one hand clapped to the side of his head, and he tripped in the darkness and went over backwards. Fuck, she wanted to lie down. The bastard with the guts was curled up on his side now, sobbing. She wanted to join him. Instead, she struggled to her feet, clinging to the corner of a crate full of flatbow bolts, knees bent like a sailor on the slick deck of a storm-tossed ship. She gasped for air, wheezing, braying, wanting to puke with each breath. Her face was one pulsing mass of pain. Gorst was still straining at the handles of the windlass, veins bulging from his neck, sweat beaded on his forehead, the mechanism grinding. His eyes flickered to his steels on the floor beside his boot, then to the other side of the room. Over there, in the shadows, Smiler clambered up, growling through gritted teeth. He had a great ragged wound down the side of his head, blood pattering his shoulder and streaking his armor, his ear hanging off by a shred of gristle. A wound bad enough to make him very angry, but not bad enough to put him down. Vic could certainly have used Gorst's help, but if he let go and that portcullis dropped, all their plans were fucked.
Stay!
She snarled at him, her battered throat hardly able to get the air, her battered mouth hardly able to make the words.
I'll handle this!
She caught the haft of the big axe and dragged it towards her, blade scraping against the stones. Bloody hell, it was a weight. Thick haft riveted with strips of steel, she could scarcely even lift it. Smiler was on his feet, facing her from the other side of the chain room near the open door, one of his dead comrade's fallen swords in one hand, the other clapped to the gash Vic had dug into the side of his head. His leather jerkin was splattered all over, no way of telling what was red paint or his blood or hers. His face twisted into a snarl.
Come here, bitch!
He roared at her. Vic charged, or at any rate she half stumbled, half fell, but not straight at him, sideways at the portcullis. She dropped, which wasn't hard to do, and slid the axe along the floor, ramming the haft straight through the grating until the blade caught against it. Gorst let go of the windlass. There was a whir of gears as the portcullis dropped, then a clank as one of the steel bars caught on the axe haft and was held there, loose chains faintly rattling. Gorst gave a soft growl as he peeled his hands from the handles. He bent down, narrowed eyes fixed on Smiler. He came up with his bloody steels in his fists. He worked his shoulders, then stretched his neck one way, then the other.
Come here, bitch,
he said in that piping voice. Smiler glanced at Vic. She stayed on her knees and gave a little shrug. He tossed away the sword and bolted through the open doorway. Gorst stepped over one of the corpses, put his shoulder to the door and heaved it shut again. Ended up sitting on the floor with his back to the wood. The burner who'd been stuck in the guts had stopped screaming. Just lay there on his side, in a great slick of blood, each breath a shallow squeak.
You hurt?
Asked Gorst. Vic put her fingers gingerly to her nose, a barely recognizable sticky mass on the front of her throbbing face.
"I've had worse," she mumbled.
Would have sounded more dauntless if she could have made the S sound, maybe. She thought she could hear something, the blood rushing in her skull, or hooves at a distance. She stumbled on wobbling legs, gripping hard at her aching hip, over to the slit windows facing the dry moat. She squinted into the brightness outside, face pressed to the stone. She saw the bridge, the slogan-daubed buildings beyond, the wide street that led into the city. And coming up it, at a clattering canter, a great mass of horsemen, armed and armoured, bristling with steel. Leo Danbrock's Lion Standard flew at the head, the Son of the Union beside it.
"They're here,"
she croaked. Would have felt more relief if her neck hurt less, maybe. She tried to sniff and failed, then worked her tongue around her mouth and spat more blood.
"So, that's good."
The scarred walls of the Agrient rushed up to meet them. Leo's eyes were narrowed against the wind, his horse jolting wildly on the cobbled street, riders shouting and jostling all around him, but he saw now that the portcullises were still raised, their iron teeth gleaming in the ceiling of the entrance tunnel. Teufel had come through. The woman made herself hard to like, but Leo much preferred competence to charm these days. The archway of white light beckoned at the far end. The way into the Agrient was open. Leo grinned sideways at Durand, and Durand smiled back. By the dead, he'd forgotten the feeling of riding at the enemy with good men beside him. People scattered from the gateway, shocked faces as they dived aside. Could have been breakers, burners, fools come to gawp at Savine's trial, or fools running for their lives. All Leo was sure of was that they were in his way. He gave his horse the spurs, sending a stab of pain through his own leg, knocking a man spinning from his horse's flank to crash into the tunnel wall. His scream was lost in the thundering echoes. Smashing hooves, rattling armor, ringing weapons, roared orders, all the sounds Leo most loved. He was the young lion again. They plunged out into the brightness. There was something like resistance further down the road, where the way narrowed between two white buildings. A few dozen burners, all daubed with red, trying to throw up a barricade around an upturned cart. Leo couldn't have stopped even if he'd wanted to, and he didn't.
"For the Union!" he roared, aching from the effort of clinging to his horse. "Charge!"
He picked his spot, hunched low as he jumped a few tangled chairs and crashed down among the shrieking burners on the other side, scattering bodies. He had to drop his reins to free his sword. You'd think with one arm you could still swing a blade well enough, but without his leg to grip his horse or his other arm to give him balance, he wobbled in the saddle, flailed uselessly, struck someone with the flat, and nearly fumbled the grip. His own clumsiness filled him with fury, and he clenched his teeth, hacking about him, finally landing a decent blow on the other side, blood spattering yellow hair. He wasn't the man he used to be, that was plain. He was streaming with sweat under his armour, gasping for breath, useless arm throbbing numbly. Riders kept smashing into the remnants of the barricade, jumping over it, blades flashing in the sunlight. Durand had his teeth bared, swinging away. A couple of horses lay dying. One of Leo's officers was on his knees coughing blood, but the burners were shattered, already running. Some of Forrest's men tore after them on horseback, the Lord Marshal himself close behind, couched over his saddle as his horse jumped the half-built barricade.
"Save the king!"
he roared over his shoulder, and Leo spurred after, clinging to sword and reins at once. The park opened up before them, a muddy, overgrown mockery of the shimmering greenery he'd swaggered through when he first visited Adua. There were running figures everywhere, running towards him, running away. Almost as much chaos as the day of the great change. Over the roofs ahead, he could see the great gilded dome, gleaming dully beneath its streaking of soot, and beyond it, the black spike of the Tower of Chains. The thought suddenly floated up of how much simpler things might be if Savine had already taken the long drop. Leo pushed it angrily away. She was his wife, the mother of his children. He was duty-bound to do everything he could to save her. The young lion might not be swept away by every feeling anymore, but he still took his duty very seriously.
"Forward!" he roared over his shoulder. "To the Lord's Round!"
He'd be damned if anyone would call it the Court of the People ever again.